This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. And by Unmanned Systems and Solutions, USAS, a combat veteran-owned company that repairs all types of drones. If you're a consumer who owns a drone, a small business using drones, or a drone manufacturer looking for sophisticated repair, distribution, and warehousing, look into USAS. For more information, visit unmannedsas.com/UAV Digest. You're listening to episode 188 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And he's back. I'm back. It's David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Thanks for covering me, Mac, for me last week, Max. It's been a long couple of weeks, unfortunately. And I want to thank everybody who shouted out and reached out to me via email about my father. He loved the fact that I did this show, and he was very proud of it in Airplane Geeks. To the day he passed, he called it a blog, and I would blog every Monday night. But you know, when you're
close
92,
enough.
When you're 92, you get a pass. So thanks to all everybody out there who sent their condolences. But we got a show to do. We got Life Goes On. So we've got Ervada Inflates, Drones Are Slayed, Photos Are Taught, a This Week in Legislation, and bunch of other things like a video of the week. So, Max, should we get started? I'm a little out of practice, so let's go. Well, our first story comes from shepherdmedia.com. Ervada unveils an inflatable UAV. French company Diodon Drone Technology is offering drone solutions for inspection missions and or reconnaissance in hard-to-reach areas. Their idea is going back to good old Goodyear and Goodyear inflataplanes. In this case, it would be an inflated drone.
You know, David, when I first saw this article, my initial thought was, oh boy, this just must be a toy or something. We should mention this came from Jet City Star in our Slack team. But when you start to look at it, when you start to think about it, it's kind of an interesting idea. Now, the inflatable part are the arms of these multi-rotors, quadcopters, hexacopters. The arms inflate. And some of the advantages of that are that it makes the whole kit smaller for carrying. The copters are a bit more resistant to impact and shock because they have this sort of inflatable component. And they're waterproof, and so they float. Interesting idea. And they inflate pretty quickly.
Well, like I referenced, the historian will reference, you know, Goodyear came up with something called the inflataplane, which was designed for the Army, which was going to be a band-carrying backpack inflatable aircraft. The most mass was the engine, the rest of the aircraft. And when you have an inflatable anything, you get automatically, you get an amphibian. You can land on water or land and fly. And if you want to be able to carry something for an inspection, now, if we're talking antenna inspections, sometimes antennas are not necessarily in accessible places, like tops of mountains and stuff. So you've got something that's portable and that you can do the inspection with that you can man pack up the top of the mountain.
Inflation is accomplished with CO2 cartridges. And as I mentioned, it's a pretty quick process. I think the article says 30 seconds, but on the Diodon Drone Technology website, they show that being 45 seconds. But either way, that's pretty quick. They talk about three variants that they're looking at, different sizes. The smallest is the SP-20. That's a quadcopter. And typically that might carry a payload of like a camera and a video downlink system. There's a larger MP-40. That's a hexacopter. That is envisioned with carrying something, for example, like a camera with a gimbal, as well as the downlink system. And then there's the large HP-150. That's also a hexacopter. That's something that could lift something like a DSLR or a thermal imaging camera on a gimbal. Quite interesting. It's a French company. I get the feeling that they're kind of focusing on their local market, the French market, but they are getting apparently some interest from around the world, and so they're looking at possibly satisfying a larger market.
You mean sales are ballooning?
Sales. If you're off, you're not off by much.
That was just me using hot air.
Okay, here we go. So I looked up the word Diodon because it just seemed like, where does that come from? D-I-O-D-O-N. And it's the term for a puffer fish. So a really properly named a project here, I think, the Diodon.
Wow, you just inflated my knowledge.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can knock it down with the next story.
I got a couple of weeks worth of puns to get out here. You know this, Max.
I know. You're off to a good start, David.
Well, as you said, the next one's going to slay us as far as it being entertaining. Judge rules in favor of drone slayer, dismisses lawsuit filed by pilot. This is from Ars Technica. And we covered this back in 2015. A Kentucky man shot down a drone that he believed was flying over his property. And in 2016, the drone owner sued the man in federal court. He wanted the court to determine if his flight constituted trespassing. And then what happened?
Well, the judge didn't agree. Actually, the judge didn't disagree, but he thought the venue was wrong. What they were trying to prove in court was that the FAA, since the FAA regulates drones in the air, that meant that federal law applied. And he wanted the shooter of his drone to pay damages to repair or replace the drone. But as I said, the judge dismissed the case saying it was the wrong venue. Now, interestingly, the FAA did not join in the suit. And the judge said, and this is a quote, "The fact remains that the FAA has not sought to enforce any such regulations in this case. Moreover, FAA regulations at most would constitute ancillary issues in this case, in which the heart of the claim is one for damage to his unmanned aircraft under Kentucky state law."
We've got jurisdiction issues.
Right. And, you know, the author of the article in Ars Technica, I thought did a great job because the author consulted with several legal experts who looked at this and they basically agreed with the judge that this was not the right legal case to settle these core issues of jurisdiction and so forth that we've been talking about.
And there's two issues there. There's the FAA. Now, if it becomes a federal case, we know that the drone is an aircraft and you're not supposed to shoot at aircraft. And then there's the property value case. Does taking out and shooting your neighbor's go-kart or car or drone, does that you should be reimbursed for that property? So I have a feeling that this one's going to progress down. I think we've got legal precedents here to see what happens with this. I can't imagine that it won't go further because somebody was harmed, as we say in the insurance business, and there should be repercussions or commensurate money for what happened. So we shall see.
Yeah, we don't know at this time or at the time the article was written if they're going to appeal this judge's ruling. They might not. So I agree. I think the issue will ultimately get dealt with. Whether it will via this case or some other case is, you know, kind of anyone's guess at this point, I guess. I think a lot of people were kind of hoping that, you know, we could start the process of resolving the, you know, the property rights issue and the overflight over private property issue, all that kind of thing through this case. But we're going to have to wait.
Yeah, we're just not going to get the picture of what's going on. And I say that because our next story is from PR Newswire. Renowned drone photographer Ella Licardi partners with DJI to host aerial photography workshop world tour. Ella Licardi is a professional travel photographer and videographer, and he lives a 100% mobile lifestyle. But he's working with DJI to come up with photography workshops. Max and I are both photographers. We're both fairly good photographers, but
better than drone pilots.
You're right. We're better photographers than drone pilots. But one of the things is to be a good photographer. We've talked about this on the show. The drone is a tool, and you still need basic photography composition and videography rules and post-processing techniques and all of that other stuff. It doesn't mean that you're going to get perfectly good pictures without having to learn some of those skill sets too. And in this case, it's not necessarily how to fly the drone, but how to use it as a photography tool.
Right, exactly. And it's fairly common for photographers to run workshops if they're particularly skilled in one type of photography, sports photography or landscape photography or portraiture, for example, or if they have particular skills with certain equipment. This represents a great source of income for a photographer who many times struggles otherwise. And it's a great opportunity for the students to get some really, really good instruction from a master. So Ella, if you look at his website, we'll have a link in the show notes, does some just really spectacular work. I mean, it's just awesome. Awesome stuff. And some of it is aerial photography. And he uses DJI Inspire and Phantom drones for his aerial photography, although he does do a little bit of helicopter work as well. So DJI is sponsoring this workshop. And there's a series of tours around the world. This first one with this photographer is in Lisbon, Portugal, in May of 2017, and there are other sessions around the world. They are limited to 12 students or participants, let's say. And what happens is you go out with the expert and visit some really amazing destinations and do some photography, in this case with DJI drones. It's a 2.5-day workshop. But besides just talking about drone photography, as well as post-processing of drone photos, they're also going to include in this workshop some safe piloting techniques using the DJI quadcopters. So that's great. It sounds like almost kind of an obvious thing once you think about it. You know, why would they not take the opportunity to include that that part of the training, the experience? And so that's great. I'm really happy to see that. So if you are interested in really honing your skills as a drone photographer, this may be something to take a look at.
And for $1,500 or $3,000, so we'll ask for our clients to send us $3,000 so Max and I can go play. I'm joking, folks. 2 days, $1,500. And if you've been on sort of photography expeditions, you're going to end up coming back with photographs that you absolutely adore and love later on, as well as the skills to take better photographies. But it sounds like some of these areas where you won't be able to take a bad photograph because they're so beautiful. So I think let's move on to if you're going to be taking pictures with drones, don't be taking them in pictures of your neighbors because that violates privacy standards. And this is from unmannedaerial.com. Proposed drone bill threatens to upend privacy standards. Now, this is from Ken and our Slack team. And Max, I keep trying to tell people that there are privacy laws. They don't need to have privacy laws about drones. But that they don't seem to listen to us, do they?
No, at least some of our elected officials don't. This comes from U.S. Senator Edward Markley. He's a Democrat from Massachusetts. And U.S. Representative Peter Welch, Democrat from Vermont.
Those New Englanders.
There they go again. David's saying that because I are one. So they've reintroduced this act. This is the Drone Aircraft Privacy and Transparency Act. It's something they tried previously. Didn't go very far. So they've reintroduced it. Now, this article describes that the Commercial Drone Alliance, the CDA, is looking at this and saying something that, well, that we've said here before, which is that you don't need to create new laws for new technology when you've got existing laws that can apply to the new technology as well.
The article says, quote, existing technology neutral standards pertain to photos captured by handheld cameras, smartphones, telephoto lenses, helicopters, and UAS without distinction. These rules are further strengthened by prohibitions against trespassing, stalking, and peeping toms, the alliance says. Well, yeah, if you're staring using binoculars or a drone, it's the same thing if you're staring in somebody's window. Laws for law's sake is not something that I think either Max, you or I are fond of.
No, and there's a quote in here from the chief strategy officer for drone services provider Uplift Data Partners, Michael Ladiner. I guess he says the legislation requires operators to make publicly available via the FAA listings of their future operations, such as where, when, and for what purpose the drone is flying. So I pulled up the act, the text of it, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. But when you look at the section talking about data collection statements and data minimization statements, there's a data collection statement. And these requirements I find just amazing.
They're draconian.
They're draconian. The individuals or entities that will have the power to use the unmanned aircraft system have to be named. The specific locations in which the unmanned aircraft system will operate, you always know that in advance. The maximum period for which the unmanned aircraft system will operate in each flight, this is all in advance. Whether the unmanned aircraft system will collect information or data about individuals or groups of individuals, and if so, the circumstances under which the system will be used, specific kinds of information, the retention, whether information is going to be sold, the period for which such information will be retained. I mean, it goes on and on and on. I think this is over the top. I mean, I'm a privacy advocate for sure, but I think this is kind of unreasonable. Now, the article does suggest that this prior notice requirement puts journalists' First Amendment rights in jeopardy. But I think that's misreported because in the act's favor, actually, it does say, quote, the procedures established shall not apply with respect to unmanned aircraft systems operated for news gathering activities protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. So the act does carve out journalism, news gathering missions for drones.
You know, I think I remember us talking about this the first time around.
Yes, I think so.
You know, and that just makes me wonder, we've been doing this a long time, if we've got like second and third rounds of legislation coming through. Yeah. So
I don't know. We'll see what the current congressional makeup thinks about this act. It's coming from two Democrats, and Democrats are not very...
Well, they are this week. They.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Maybe, Max, since you're the New Englander, or maybe I can try to find some time to do this, we should reach out to Senator Markey and Representative Welch and see what they have to say. Maybe they'll come on to talk about privacy and why we need to have a separate privacy law for drones.
Yeah, it's worth a shot. Maybe we'll try to get in touch and see what they say. You know, I have to mention this. I know this is a little bit off topic, but
nothing's off topic, Max.
The article was talking about this and called it the bicameral legislation on drone privacy. Bicameral? I have never heard that. Have you? Did you know that word? I had to look it up.
It's of two houses, meaning that when you have bicameral legislation, it means someone is filing, they're using the same legislation at the same time. They're filing it with the Senate and they are filing it with the House of Representatives.
So that was my word for the day, David.
I should know that because I'm the one with the history degree.
I guess so.
In these day and ages, I don't think bicameral legislation occurs too often.
No.
So we'll see.
You know what does occur often these days, David, is the Russians are in the news.
And if they're listening to us, well, thank you for listening to us. And we hope you enjoyed the rest of the show. But evidently, this is from RBTH, which is Russia Beyond the Headlines. A military drone launches directly from missiles. This is a new way of deploying drones, huh, Max?
This is the SPLAV Research and Manufacturing Association, I guess you'd say it. They're a Russian manufacturer of multiple launch rocket systems. So these are those big giant trucks you see with all of these launch tubes on the back, and this thing fires missiles. So what they've done is apparently designed a drone that you can, put in the missile. The missile or missiles, launch and deploy the drone downrange.
Well, okay. They're not putting it in the missile, I think. I think they're using the missile as a way to deploy. They're not putting it in the missile, but they're using the booster and the tube system to launch the vehicle, like you would launch out of a submarine. You have an explosive charge that launches it out, and then the aircraft takes off beyond that. There used to be something called zero-length launch. What's old is new again, where they were testing in the 50s F-104s and F-100s with giant rockets on the bottom of them that would take off so they wouldn't need any runways. So I think that's the way this system is designed to work.
But it shoots these drones way downrange, like 55 miles. So I guess the idea is this lets them forward deploy, and they're probably not much of a target along the way unless you've got an anti-missile system or something, I guess. But I guess the thing that kind of piqued my interest with this is just the notion of deploying drones. And, I mean, normally we think of a drone being, at a warehouse if you're Amazon or, wherever the home base is, and deploying the drone from there. This is a method to move the drone to some other place pretty quickly. Now, you talk about that booster that gets it there. I don't know what happens to that part of this whole system.
It drops off and lands somewhere in someone's backyard. Mm. It's no different, Max, than if you launch a cruise missile. You're deploying an aircraft. We've deployed aircraft by rockets. We've dropped them out of the back of other aircraft. And we've deployed them from submarines, rockets. So it's another way of the Russians trying to compete with the United States and Israel. And this is... this may be a little bit in too much into the weeds, but the Russians haven't created a long range or a long endurance unmanned aerial vehicle. If you can get your vehicle 55 miles downrange before you actually deploy it, that gives you additional loitering time over that, and that gives you the additional range down that they don't have with a smaller drone, that they wouldn't have the persistence like the Israelis or the United States have with their Predators and Reapers and Eaglets, the IAI aircraft. So it's one way of trying to get your drone downrange.
Yeah, I guess it's not something you'd use for, humanitarian missions, where you got to worry about where that booster lands.
Well, yeah, but if you needed to get a drone with a package to someone quickly, it's a good way to speed up the process, you know. So let's talk about the video of the week. Sailing takes me away to where I'm knowing. Wailing.
This is a pretty simple video, actually. And Drone Mama showed me this. Drone captures incredible video of rare whale behavior. And what this is a video that NOAA produced from a drone around the Hawaiian Islands. They were at the Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary. And apparently, rarely, humpback whales will position themselves vertically in the water with their tail sticking up out of the water, kind of acting like a sail and kind of, you know, float by with that. So this is a video of that taking place, a humpback whale with a young whale with it. That'll be in the show notes. It's just kind of a nice, simple, short, kind of a cool thing. I mean, how often do you see humpback whales sailing through the ocean?
I don't know. It sounds like quite a tale to me.
Okay. Boy, you are really on form. All right. We want to mention just a couple of conferences. Want to again mention the Ascend Conference and Expo. That's an event for commercial UAS interests, July 19th through 21st in Portland, Oregon. That's this year, 2017. And recall that we have a discount code. It'll get you $50 off of that. The code is the UAV Digest. And also we wanted to mention InterDrone, the International Drone Conference and Exhibition. That's in Las Vegas, this September 6 through 8, 2017. Registration for that is now open. And you can find links to both of those expos, conferences, at the UAVDigest.com. Over on the right-hand side, scroll down, you'll find banners for those. Click on those, and you'll be off and running. So with that, David, I think that's all we've got for this episode. It's good to have you back again. It feels right again, so I want to just tell you how happy I am that you're back. For all of you, of course, the website is the UAVDigest.com. Find our show notes there if you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode. Since this is episode 188, you can go to the UAVDigest.com/188.
And of course, we're everywhere on social media. We have a Twitter account at UAV Digest. We have our Facebook account, which is facebook.com/UAVDigest. You can, of course, and we want everybody to do this, become part of our Slack listener team. And you can do that through our website at theuavdigest.com/team, or just send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest with the email you'd like us to use. And Max and I will quickly send you an invite and you can join the conversation there. Likewise, if you have some questions for us or you have a story that you'd like us to talk about, you can send it to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Likewise, you also, believe it or not, can reach Max and I at our individual accounts at max@theuavdigest.com and david@theuavdigest.com. We want other people to find us, and the best way that happens is by you leaving a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. That way, we get our rankings up there, and other people will find us when they're searching for quality UAV news. We have swag at our Cafe Press store, or you can become a patron of the show at patreon.com. And of course, all of those links are available on the show notes. And Max, I have to say something. It's kind of funny, but I'll have to give a shout out to my favorite podcast.
Yeah,
because they did a milestone today as we record this. There's a podcast called Star Wars 7x7, which is Alan Voivod's podcast, which is 7 minutes a day, 7 days a week, all about Star Wars. And he reached, ready for this, his 1,000th episode
wow.
today.
Amazing. And what's the name of that podcast again?
Star Wars 7x7.
7x7.
We'll have a link to the show notes. And it's extremely quality audio and a trivia question every day. And he does it 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and good for Alan. So, but yeah, I when I think of how many episodes we've done of Airplane Geeks, thinking of doing 1,000 episodes is just kind of awesome. So, so with that, I'm going to say congratulations, Alan. Thanks to all the people who've been around to supporting me over the last couple of weeks and months, especially my co-host, Max. This is David in Philly.
Ian, Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.
This episode was sponsored in part by Unmanned Systems and Solutions. 30 USAS technicians repair all types of drones in their 120,000-square-foot professional drone repair facility. USAS also offers full-service operations consulting and programs for commercial and government users. Visit unmannedsas.com/UAVDigest to learn more about how to get your drone repaired.